You may not enter a city of my people on the day of their destruction. You may not look on without a forceful defense as you wrong him in a day of misfortune. That's Obadiah chapter 1, verse 13. The version of Yours Truly from 2003 and our daily scripture for today, little children. You might notice there's a bit of a difference between the version of Yours Truly and some other versions that you read. Now, in our article, The Ark of Urartu, continuing on in part 2, chapter 11, now we're at paragraph 5. And on the left, at the beginning of this paragraph, we see an illustration, beautiful color in this illustration. And it's an illustration of the Queen Mother of the West. Interesting. Might remind you of something from The Wizard of Oz, but or something else. But this is the Chinese mythology, the Queen Mother of the West. We see if we can make this a little smaller. There we go. We see a beautiful, although perhaps not quite as young as she once was. Hard to say, though, from this painting. It's a painting. It's even got what appears to be Chinese characters on the lower right. She's got a yellow sleeved gown with greenish blue shoulders and red or orange red midsection, and the sleeves are yellow with embroidered fringe with what look like they may be flowers embroidered on that fringe. And very wide sleeves. Extremely wide. And the chair she's sitting on, it has got a green frame. It's got a colorful back with what look like flowers, pink flowers. The rest of it, it's a little hard to make out what she's doing with her hands. One of her hands, her right hand, looks like it might be holding something pink. And her vest that she's wearing under the gown looks like it's got, that's the fringe of the neck of the garment. It's the same as the sleeves fringe in being a lighter green color with flowers on it. And in fact, there they look more clearly to be flowers, identifiable as such. So there's the wonderful illustration. She's got black hair. She's looks like she's from the Chinese race or Chinese ethnic group. She's got a hair band of some kind holding her hair up, if not more than one, and she's got, on top of that, there's some kind of a decoration at the top on her head or on the headband, which is yellow, the ornament. It looks like it might be some kind of creature. And then she's like a depiction of a creature, whereas the headband is light blue. The creature on top is gold-colored. And her name is Shi Wang Miu. We should actually put that in. Let's put that into the Google Translate. I've been doing that today. I just decided I shouldn't be guessing, or I shouldn't be relying on my own translation or my own pronunciations. We'll just enter these Chinese words into the Google Translator and let the engine pronounce it. So here's her name.
Shi Wang Mu.
Oh, Mu. It sounds like it's going down.
Xi Wang Mu.
Mu. Yeah. It's not Mu. It's not Mu, right? Which would be a downward inflection, it's a mu, mu, which has got more of an upward ending to it. That's what, mu. Xi, listen to it again.
Xi wang mu.
Xi wang, see?
Xi wang mu.
Xi wang, xi wang mu. Like that. And so Xi Wang Mu is the Queen Mother of the West. And this, by the way, is a painting using ink and color on silk over paper by Ogata Korin, circa 1705 CE. And the dark areas on the full moon, as we begin to read our paragraph, 11.5, reveal the jade rabbit. In Chinese mythology, the jade rabbit helps Heng Yu. Let's take a look at that. How it's pronounced.
Chang
E. Oh, Chang E. It is CH. I played it several times. I either missed it or it wasn't playing it. I couldn't hear the CH. I heard just an H sound.
Chang'e.
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 Chang'e. It has to come up. The inflection is upwards on both syllables. And compare her name with the person I've been calling Kang Ji, but it's pronounced in Chinese.
Chang'e.
There, this is the one that has the H sound.
Hang Jie.
Hang Jie. Hang Jie. Has to come up.
Hang Jie.
Hang Jie. Hang Jie.
Hang Jie.
The first syllable is even pitch, and the last is rising. The second is rising. So her name is, you can compare it with Hang Jie, who I was pronouncing Kang Ji, or Kainan, and the wife of Hu Yi. How do you pronounce Hu Yi? I don't know that either, but we'll look that up some other time. The wife of Hu Yi is helping Chang E. What's her name again? Let's find it. No, they're both rising. Chang'e. Chang'e.
Chang'e.
Or is it Chang'e? Yeah, Chang'e.
Chang'e.
Chang'e. They don't seem to stick to the strictest form of the pitch control. So Chang'e has got help from the jade rabbit. Now, Chang'e is the wife of Hu Yi. We can find that probably by looking at her entry here. The wife of... Maybe I do want to get the pronunciation for Hu Yi. Here he is. Okay, good. Let's get that and see what we can find for his name. He's the husband of Chang'e. 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 That was better the last time I pronounced it. Let's see what we can do here. Let's copy hers again and paste over top of in that new.
Ho Yi.
Ho Yi.
Ho Yi.
Both downward. Ho Yi. Ho Yi. So. Chang'e, Chang'e. They're both upward. And Hu Yi, they're both downward.
Ho Yi.
Ho Yi. Chang'e and Ho Yi. The husband of Chang'e. In the Mid-Autumn Festival. So, the jade rabbit helps the wife of Ho Yi to pound medicine. And in the Mid-Autumn Festival or Moon Festival, both Chinese and Vietnamese people observe the 15th day of the 8th month of the Chinese calendar. That is September or early October. Chang'e is the moon goddess of immortality who was married to the famous hunter Ho Yi. Compare with Fo He and Qi Yu. Or Qi Yu is pronounced that way, I believe. We saw in the previous paragraph. Qi Yu, yes, right. I looked up Fo He, I think, too. Didn't I? Fu? Yeah. Fu Shi, I think that was the pronunciation for Fu Shi. But I could be wrong, too. It's hard to learn it all. But the sun, look at this. Now, Ho Yi, or Yi, was a mythical Chinese archer who shot birds called sunbirds out of heaven when they threatened Earth. Sounds like the phoenix, doesn't it? Sunbird? For which heroic deed, Ho Yi was banished from the heavens. Lei Zhu, the wife of the Yellow Emperor, has been traditionally held to have discovered silk. See, it's a different name for the wife of the Yellow Emperor, even though the Jade Emperor's wife was the Queen Mother of the West, we believe, right? So, I mean, there's more than one name given to these people, even though they might be the same person. Chang'e is the moon goddess who was married, or Chang'e, the moon goddess of immortality, was married to the famous hunter Ho Yi, or in other words, Fu Shi, could be the same person. And therefore, she's like the aunt or somebody, you know, in the previous generation compared to the, or maybe even two generations prior, it looks like, compared to the Yellow Emperor, if she's married to Fu Shi. And she became immortal when she drank both elixirs of immortality, which Ho Yi had earned from the Queen Mother of the West. Queen Mother is known by many names, including Wife of the Jade Emperor, as I just mentioned. And Shi Wang Mu. Oh, that's right, we have that one here somewhere. It's three syllables. Three syllables.
Shi Wang Mu.
Shi Wang Mu. The Queen Mother of the West. She's known by many names, right? And she has a strong association with the earliest Taoism associated with the Kunlun Mountains. Kunlun Mountains in westernmost China. It is said, we look up the word Kun here. Let's see. Kunlun is the way you pronounce that. Kun. Kun? No, it's Kun. It's Kun with an even pitch. Kunlun? Kunlun? Mountains in westernmost China. It is said that after the opening of silk trade routes, this is, I think, you may find fascinating. I do, because we heard about the silk trade routes when we studied geography or social studies in school when I was younger. Silk trade routes in the 2nd century BCE. After that,
Shi Wang Mu.
Shi Wang Mu. Shi Wang Mu. 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 Shi Wang Mu became more popular, as today she is known in China, Japan, and Korea. Ho Yi, or Yi, was a mythical Chinese archer who shot the birds, right? Lei Tzu, with the wife of the Yellow Emperor, has been traditionally held to have discovered silk. There's another name for her. Lei Tzu, the wife of the Yellow Emperor, has traditionally been held, assuming that's the same person. Though it would be she's still the wife of the Yellow Emperor. Perhaps he had more than one wife. I don't think that's the case, though. But she's been traditionally held to have discovered silk. That's a huge discovery, it seems. Being the woman who invented the silk loom in the 27th century BCE, so they even have the date in agreement with the time of the Yellow Emperor, who began to rule in 2699, which is the 27th century, the very beginning of that century. In our chronology, fits perfectly. It is said she persuaded her husband to give her a grove of mulberry trees where she could domesticate the worms. Now, I think that's enough for today because I want to cover something interesting. I want to show you a video that I discovered which I think helps illustrate something important. It's to do with recording audio, okay? But it has a very good analogy to the idea of computers with regard to upgrading computer systems as well. But it uses, in this case, the application of audio recording. Let's listen. It's Billy Hume, is it? Let's see. Billy Hume. His channel, Freaking Out with Billy Hume, on YouTube.
People are debating which sounds better. We've all seen how there's tons of analog versus digital videos out there where people are debating which sounds better. And I've never taken much interest in any of that because I've felt like people are completely missing the point on why analog is better. And it has nothing to do with the sound. But it's something that took me years to understand. Now, I started recording on tape around 1978, working my way through multiple multi-track formats until I bought this Tascam 1-inch 16-track reel-to-reel in 1988 for my studio, The Zone. I used it almost continuously for 12 years. And I worked on 2-inch 24-track machines at other studios all through the 1990s.
Now, I would just point out, in watching this, think about, not about imitating what this person is doing, but what he's saying. Listen to what he's saying. That's what I'm suggesting.
But there were so many things that frustrated me about analog. Yes, I know that recording a hot level of tape and getting that tape compression is cool. And of course, analog smooths out those quick initial transients that are at the beginning of percussive sounds. But still, there was so much to hate about analog. It's noisy. Yeah, you could use Dolby or DBX noise reduction, but that made it sound like there was a veil over the sound. And no matter what kind of tape machine I was using, after I'd recorded something, it would sound different than the way it sounded when I'd mic'd everything up. And that was the sound I wanted. So I'd have to counteract by EQing, usually boosting some treble or mid-range, but it was always a guessing game. And each time you ran or recorded a new track, a teeny bit of high-end would get erased from the tape. So if you're working on an album for months, by the time you got to mixdown, it sounded worse. Also, tape was expensive. I was spending $70 to $80 a reel, which after recording alignment tones, would leave me about 15 minutes of recording time, which meant recording an album was a lot of money for a lot of reels of tape. So when you could record...
He's recording at 30 inches per second instead of 15. That's why he's only getting 15 minutes instead of 30.
Record and mix professionally, completely in a computer, I was all in. More tracks, instantly recallable mixes, non-destructive editing. I was so early into the game that I was among the first to record and mix Billboard charting hits, totally in the box. And I stayed there for years. It was a new frontier of technology and efficiency. But over time...
He means in the computer box.
I felt like something was missing and that we were all being driven to this rush, assembly line production. I just wanted to get back to something that was creative and unique, which is one of the reasons I started this YouTube channel. But then two things happened. I went and got my 1-inch 16-track reel-to-reel from my other studio, The Zone, where it had been in storage for almost 25 years. And I made a couple short videos about it as a curiosity from my past. And then I figured I'd stick it in the corner and my clients could look at it and go, cool. But those videos blew up, which caused me to make more videos, which caused me to dig through my old recordings and reevaluate the past. And I started live streaming some of my recording sessions, which awakened something inside of me. The energy of having an audience and creating music in the moment. You see, I got into music to be a performing recording artist. I hadn't thought about being a producer or mixer except for my own music. I was having a blast, and I realized that everything I created during the live streams was way better than the things I'd been creating using the kind of workflows we've fallen into over the last 10 or 20 years. And all of that stuff got me thinking about commitment. See, nowadays, if you stake 'em a take, Nowadays, if you make a mistake, you just hit undo. But back then, there was no undo. You see, When you would punch in a vocal or anything, it meant that it was going to erase what was previously there. Now, you could always record your fixes to another track, but since most of us were working on 8, 16 track, maybe 24 track, you were going to run out of tracks. You weren't likely to do that. You could record your fixes to another track and bounce them back to the original track, but that would add another layer of noise to the tape. So you were less likely to do that as well. All this meant that you needed to know what you were going to do, and you needed to have your together. But nowadays, we have unlimited undos. Now, don't get me wrong, I love my undos, but I found myself sometimes recording a part so many times that by the time I get it right, it has lost all its soul and energy. And after that, I'm going back and listening to all these different takes, and I'm putting off making a visceral decision versus a clinical decision, which just takes you away from the gut of the moment and takes time and energy away from getting to the rest of the song, which just starts to affect everything else.
This reminds me of Bob Dylan always insisted that the first take was the best take. That was something he always... He was the only one who said that, it seems like, because most people would, you know, insist they had to do multiple takes or whatever. But some people were purists or whatever you want to call it. They would say no. And Bob Dylan was the only one I could think, the only one I knew of, who said no, first take.
But working in analog force you to take your art more seriously as a skill or a craft or a commitment. Because when you went to the studio, there was a lot at stake. It was kind of like going to a wedding or an important meeting or going on stage, because recording was a performance. Another reason why analog is better has to do with longevity. This is the first computer I recorded and mixed on in the studio. I moved on to a standalone Akai 16-track recorder, but after that, it was just a series of new computers, new operating systems, interfaces. It averages out to about one new computer and all the crap that goes along with that every 3 years or so. And there's been the unending and expensive cable upgrades. Some of these SCSI cables cost me $90 each. I've got boxes of all the different types of cables we use to hook...
A SCSI cable is a small computer system interface, SCSI.
...hook up our interfaces to the computers. And there's the whole computer monitor connector evolution. I've got more USB cables than I've got missing socks. We started on floppy drives and moved through a series of very expensive SCSI drives. My first 1 gigabyte hard drive cost $1,000. And because of that, we backed up onto DVDs. Every day, I probably got thousands of these. Later on, we moved to AIT, digital tape backup systems, and their proprietary tape drives. But before long, hard drives became a lot cheaper, so we started backing up onto those. But then they would upgrade the connectors, which meant we had to upgrade our cables, which meant we had to upgrade our computers. A lot of the enclosures would fail, so we started swapping out drives. But many drives died, and now all of this stuff is obsolete. And some of this music will never be recovered. There was no longevity. On the other hand, my 16-track reel-to-reel, which still runs, all the connectors are the same connectors we use today. Standard XLR connectors. And my TIAC 3340S 4-track reel-to-reel recorder, which I bought used for $800 when I was 15 years old in 1978... It uses standard RCA connectors. Now, these were not considered by any means the best tape recorders for the time. However, they are robust machines designed to last a lifetime. This thing has been sitting on a shelf at my other studio, The Zone, for almost 30 years. And I brought it up here, I guess, a year or so ago, and plugged it in, and it turned on. And I...
The two-track machine is for mastering the multitrack onto two-track stereo. And that would be the final master, right? The finished product of the mix, or the, you know, the stereo... the other tape's a master, too, but this is the stereo master.
Grabbed all these old tapes. I've listened to most of these. These are mostly from the late 70s and 80s. There's a few here I'm not sure if I've gone through. I think it's this one I've not played yet. It's from high school. It's probably 1980,
1981. So, let's skip ahead. Let's skip ahead. It's got energy. You can hear the energy in the music there. It sounds like the bass has a lot of energy. Isn't it? Okay, let's see.
Completely smooth. There's no pad that I actually use for most off. Some tapes do get sticky.
Yeah, some tapes get sticky, like the Ampex 456 that I had to bake. For, you know, he mentions that.
You can retrieve this stuff. That would get into the computer.
And once you bake it, it'll get sticky again, so you want to then transfer it to the computer at that point. But transferring it to the computer is something he said he's doing to these old tapes. But he said, listen to what he says.
Back it up.
Listen.
Of course, I guess it's kind of ironic that I'm recording it into the computer to back it up. Silly, huh?
Yeah, because computers go obsolete so fast. And the hard drives, you know, the storage systems associated with computers also are getting obsolete very fast, too.
The thing that made recording in analog so much better came down to process, how we recorded each day. And these two things that we would do over and over again that I don't think people really think much about, but had a huge impact on our state of minds. And that would be rewinding and changing reels of tape. You see, nowadays, if you got to go back and re-record something or do a punch-in and just repair one section, there's no rewind time. So you can hit stop,
let's do another take,
and instantly be right back to where you were before and start recording again.
Yeah, I think you can punch it out.
There we go. And do it again.
Yeah, that was great. Give me another.
And do it again.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah, that's digital. When you're using digital, you can just punch right in. There's no rewind time. You just go back to wherever you want, select the place you want to start recording, and just start. You don't rewind.
Give you one more.
And again.
Here we go.
And do it again. But when you were working on analog tape, rewinding back to the beginning of a verse took a little bit longer. And if you were going back to the beginning of the song, there was enough time to catch your breath, get a drink of water, collect your thoughts. And if you needed to jump to another song, you'd have to wind the whole reel off the machine, clean the heads, which you needed to do in between every reel, and then load a whole other reel on. All this took some time. Today, we don't stop. But this nonstop workflow hasn't actually added anything to the quality of my work, and it's contributed to a lack of perspective, which just leads to creative dead ends and a lot of wasted time. We don't stop. But this nonstop workflow hasn't actually added anything to the quality of my work, and it's contributed to a lack of perspective, which just leads to creative dead ends and a lot of wasted time. We don't stop. But this nonstop workflow hasn't actually added anything to the quality of my work, and it's contributed to a lack of perspective, which just leads to creative dead ends and a lot of wasted time.
This is the crux.
So years ago, I started taking lots of teeny breaks throughout the day, and I found that by just stepping away for a few minutes or walking out of the room or going outside, not long enough to get out of the vibe, but just long enough to reset my ears would make everything clearer when I hit the space bar again. And now that I think about it, maybe I've been trying to recreate the time that we would need to rewind and change reels. I mean, it doesn't matter how fast or efficient you are with your work. And, you know, if you lose perspective why we're doing this, I mean, it is art. It won't matter. The process does have a huge effect on the outcome of your work. So what is the real reason why analog is better? Well, obviously, it's not about the sound for me, because I'm going to find a good way to get the sound. It's really about the workflow and the commitment to a quality performance. It's also about having that creative space, just a little extra time to think, which is huge. But it's also about the machines and the infrastructure. Analog is a reliable and strong system. They still work. You don't have to keep replacing parts over and over again. But if you think about your computers and your operating systems and the software, how much money have you put into that? How many times does it have to be redone? And how many times does it go bad? It's just actually not that reliable. And I feel like we're building a house of cards, and not just for the music industry, but our whole society. I'm not sure we're necessarily headed down the right path in so many ways. But me, I'm just going to keep creating my music. And I hope you will, too. Thanks for watching. Remember to subscribe and be unique.
Wow. Yeah, I like the ending, be unique. But also, he's got something that I couldn't identify. He mentioned something that I was never able to identify. And that is why, after I switched to digital from my analog tape, why did my recording change, my habits or my excitement about recording changed. It decreased. And I could never understand quite why. Why was, I mean, the quality of digital was not worse. You couldn't say it was because of that. And yet, there was something about it. And he nails it, I think. But also, there's even more that I want to add, a little bit more, which is the time it takes to upgrade your computer system. It's not just the time, but the actual process of upgrading. That the process is not a creative process the same way. It's more of an, not like creating music. It's more of an analytical process to upgrade a computer. You have to study all the specs and, you know, you analyze everything before you decide what you're going to buy. It's more analytical than it is creative, buying a computer. Although there's a lot of creativity in it, or there can be, you know, in choosing a computer. In addition to the analysis part, there can be creativity, but all the effort expended on doing the upgrade, getting all the systems together, making sure they work, takes a toll and then prevents the creativity that comes with knowing your equipment, having used it many years, which was true of analog, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of factors there that make the older technology or the more independent, you might say, technology superior, and one of which he nailed was, which was the time that it was required in between rewinds and things, or to do the rewinds and to change the reels, and maybe even, you know, in my case, I added splices in between, paper tape, spliced in, or some other type of tape in between, like paper, but some kind of plastic that would be the space between songs that you splice in. And that's another thing that takes your mind away from the music moment, you know, for a few minutes as you're doing the recording process and the playback and the mix down and all that. But there's something about the analog tape that it just couldn't be, and he nailed it with saying that it became more of a performance. You had to get it right. Right, when you came to recording, because you couldn't just redo the take instantly like you can with digital. You have to rewind, and that takes time. So you want to get it right the first time. So it became more of a performance with the analog tape. This is such an amazing perspective that I learned, that is helping me understand why I miss my analog machine. I still have it. Maybe I'll start figuring out. Maybe I can use it and then mix. Transfer to computer and do the mix down digitally or something. Digitally, you know, they say digitally remastered. Digital mastering, maybe that's what I'll get into. I'm not sure yet. I'll look into it more, I'm sure, now. But it's January 4th, 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 20:38 hours, Canadian Eastern Time, and I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. Today, we did study the Ark of Uruhtu, part of the paragraph 11.5 of part 2 of the Ark of Uruhtu, down as far as the discovery of silk by the wife of the Yellow Emperor. So we'll hopefully finish that up tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed this. And that's all for today.